Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Pantycast.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. I did this to you, everyone. I did it.
Yeah, that's SML how we're starting this episode.
The Pantycast.
Yes, the Pantycast. It is a Partycast Pantycast, as we've got Tim here, we've got Chris here, we've got Brooke here, and we've got Pernell here. How is everybody doing?
Pretty good for our very first panty cast. I'm doing great, man. With panty here, first to pantyhose. If you weren't part of the group before,
we're talking about the versatility of the garment.
SML before dark.
I can't tell if Pernell's talking or not.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. What's on in the background then?
Oh, that's me listening to the great lore of Babylon or something.
Well, you should probably not do that because we could hear it.
No, that's part of the fun. I want to do that. Babylon.
Pernell wants us to learn.
It's but an education. Can't hear it.
Yeah, I can't really understand it. It's just garbled noise. Just like,
I want you to work for it then. So.
Zoom and enhance.
Zoom and enhance. Zoom it in ass. Just pinch and squeeze. That'll get the sound up.
Is that what I have to call the episode? Pinch and squeeze.
You do now. It's official. I don't make the rules. I just follow them.
So how was your week, Pernell?
Yeah, it's been adequate. I got running shoes, so I'm going to start, breaking my shins now. Trying to put those things to work. And hey,
don't do that too hard, too fast, or you will.
I gotta be mindful of it. I mean, I've been working out and exercising for the most part up until this point, but
running.
And I've been playing dance games, running, which is a lot, but dance games and running are two different things. Yes. But despite that, I do feel like it's still different from like doing no exercise and then doing this.
Yes.
So I'm hoping it transfers a little over to it. Aside from that, I got too many board games still, but that's no different from life in general. Dating apps are hot shit, but that's no different from the norm. And I still like the Nintendo Switch, so there's that.
And thank God.
You like the good Switch?
Can't do this one.
Man, you should hear this podcast.
Is it called the SML Switchcast?
No, it's the Pantycast.
Unfortunately, I am unfamiliar with pantyhose. The other downside to dating apps being shitty. So
I was trying.
What's your favorite pantyhose? Whatever MacGyver would recommend.
He's gonna go for them legs.
I mean, you got to create a makeshift slingshot, or a rope to lower yourself down from a precarious, predicament, or I don't know, a mask, or I don't know. MacGyver would put those fuckers to use. That's what he does. He's a freaking idiot savant. Actually, he's a genius, but don't tell anybody.
Or he could just put them on and make his legs look fabulous.
Yeah.
What do you think he's doing with them until he needs to use them as a tool? That's what makes it so inconspicuous. Like, MacGyver, we're trapped up here. What are we going to do? The fire's rushing in. Hang on a second. MacGyver, this is no time to get naked. We're about to die. Slow down. I got to play it. That's the idea. That's how it works.
MacGyver's like, find me like this. I gotta look good, you guys.
We're gonna die. I'm gonna be silk stalking it.
I'm gonna look fancy.
But how about you guys? How's your week been?
Mine's good. I got my shipment of Mountain Dew Typhoon in. So.
Oh hell yeah! How is it?
It's good. It's what I remember it being. It's like a tropical fruit punch Mountain Dew. It's yummy.
That was one of the ones that was originally one of the Dewmocracy promotion, wasn't it?
Yep.
Supernova should have fucking won.
Supernova should have won.
It really should have.
You're absolutely correct.
See, I'm glad you understand. You get it. You're on the level, see. I never understood how
wrong with strawberry melon. That is delicious.
Do you remember which one was it? Whiteout or Voltage? That one.
Voltage.
It was like, well, I mean, admittedly, I do like the color blue, so I like blue flavored drinks. But you know, it was no Supernova. Supernova was particularly special.
Supernova was good. That needs to come back. But nope, we're getting a limited run of Typhoon on the Dew Store instead, where it costs like $3 a can to get some.
I totally forgot. I did have one other thing for this week that I did, which was pretty cool.
What'd you do?
I met up with a friend that I haven't seen since like 2002, maybe 2003 at the latest. He was a part of our classic dance game, like circle of friends, local group of friends. And he found me through, you know, the social medias, because a friend of his was a friend of mine. And he was a pretty big wig down at the Cracker Factory. I'm joking. There was no saltines involved. But he was pretty popular around, which is why the circle was so, like, largely dense. And he's like, hey, Purnell, you remember me? That I'm like, oh, I do remember you. How's it going? He's like, oh, man. He goes in this whole thing. He's like, and he mentioned it. I mean, man, you stick out. Like, I looked up to you back in the day, and I'm glad I came across you again. And then he invited me to his restaurant that he's working at. Now he's like a chef there. He's like, I got this dish that's premiering on Monday. I want you to come out and try it. And I'm like, you haven't seen me in ages. You want me to give a shit about your burgers? You goddamn right. I'm going to give a shit about your burgers. I'm in. So I went out there, you know.
I was like, food, fuck it, I'm there.
Well, it wasn't really that. It was honestly, the shock was just that he cared to be like, hey, come out here and do this thing. Like, you haven't seen me in forever. Why would you care? And what it boiled down to is, like, he wasn't bullshitting. It was like, you were a major influence in my life at the back in the day. Because he was like a late teen back then. So high school was, you know, shit, as high school tends to be. And I hated high school, as I tend to do. So I was like a good influence. I'm like, this is how it makes sense to just be this kind of person around these kinds of people. Don't let them tell you to do X, Y, Z. Focus on what you want. Fuck those people. They can't deal with it. We'll all play dance together and give them a finger at the counter or something. Who the hell gives a shit? And it worked out, because he's a much more well-rounded. He seems to be pretty well-rounded. And the fact they outright stated these things, like, it's like, you know, you're like, I a lot of that comes from the fact that you were around hanging out and stuff back in the day. And it's one of them, you don't believe it. But if someone straight up tells it to you and then acts on it, well, you kind of have to take it. So that for me was probably the highlight of my week. But
how was the food?
I'm saluting so hard right now for our hurt. Real American hero over here.
Hey, no, I wish. That's G.I. Joe, man. I can't roll with that. I can't.
Oh, no.
Can't
be without the jingoism.
Touche. Oh, but the food was freaking delicious. In fact, the entire damn menu was on point.
How much did
you eat? Everything on the menu? My God.
Everything. I mean, never go to a restaurant. Like, this is one of those things where it's like, you go to a restaurant and sometimes you just kind of go and you're like, oh, you know, I get my staples at a restaurant. I don't really want to look into too much stuff. I'm not too sure. But this is one of those cases where you show up and you look at the menu and like, I want that and I want that and I want that. Holy shit, I want that. But I only brought X amount of dollars. I can't afford this shit. So
I only have X amount of stomach space. I can't do that
despite
shit.
Despite getting his main dish for free, I still got a bunch of stuff to take home for dinner. So I was like, what? There you go. So I got food for like the next 2 days, like today and tomorrow. So I was happy for that.
Hell yeah.
And then the last part of that story, because it was also really unexpected, was I walked into the restaurant, and as I'm going to sit down at my table, another guy walks up to me that I didn't recognize initially. He's like, hey, Purnell, what are you doing here? I'm like, holy shit, you work here? He's like, no, yeah, I'm the manager. I run this restaurant. And this is a guy. So when COVID first started and people were getting really depressed and, you know, on lockdown, they had nowhere to go, our area started this thing called like a beer exchange, where basically, and obviously I'll admit in advance, this could have easily gone very wrong, but it didn't, thankfully. You would just pretty much drop your address in like a chat group of whatnot of people from the area, and some rando would just drop beer off at your house. Just drop off a case of beer or a couple beers or whatever. So I put my name on it to see what I would get. And someone I hadn't met at the time dropped off like a really good set of beers, like high quality beer, not freaking like, you know, Coronas, which I was expecting to get. And And then, like, I never really got to meet him, but I chatted with him off and on in the chat groups. And I was like, hey, man, thanks for the good beers and all that. But he remembered me enough from, like, just that group in that era that I walked in. He's like, hey, Purnell. I'm like, holy shit. Your memory's really good. but then I walked out. He gave me more beer to take home. Like, oh, again, God. Good beers. So I'm like, well, I was honest. With him. I was like, I only drink beer, like, maybe once a week in the house now. But, hey. That means I got two more beers for two more weeks. So
the victory there, man. Shit.
you bet you're sweet Bippy.
As a former restaurant bar manager, I can confirm, like, that's just some of the shit, the only shit we feel like we can even do. So I'm like, I want to load you down with food. I want to load you down with beer because I can't do anything else for you.
Oh, sure you can. You can be great company.
Thank you. Thank you. See, Purnell's spin doctor in this. I appreciate this.
That's doctors. What happens when I get on the wheels of steel.
Stop. I kid because I love. But yeah, like it was. I mean, it was. It's been a decent week. I get into my shit sometimes, but it's been a good week overall. I think.
Awesome.
And also lots of board games. I played a board game called The Bloody Inn, which was ridiculously odd. It's called The Bloody Inn. You would probably like it. It's a pretty straightforward game, too. It's got a macabre theme, but it's fun. You are a family who opens a bar, like an inn/restaurant in like in a country. And the idea being that patrons come in and you kill them for their money and you bury them.
Full send. And as a former restaurant manager, I can also confirm. No, just kidding.
That's the thing that went down, let me tell you. So, like, you have to do that. But so basically, when they come in, you can either try to bribe them. You can attempt to, and basically, if you bribe them, you recruit them to work with you. You can take a card that you bring in from the recruitment and use them to build a place that can hide, that you can hold bodies, like a shed or a abbey or something. You can straight up kill a guy. And then you can bury them in one of the buildings you set up. But if the cops come to the inn that night and you have exposed bodies, you're in deep shit. So you have to end up hiding the bodies before the cops find them or kill the cops. But they're really hard to kill because their stats are really high. So it's surprisingly fun. Like, I got
this is a fiction.
Every part of this sounds fun to me for now, especially that last part about the cops.
It's a good game. Like, I threw freaking down. That it was a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. So yeah, it's been a good board game weekend, and now I need to work through a few more games that I gotta play through, but it's been worth it. So cool. I'll stop rambling. Oh good, so if you do end up looking into it, let me know what you think of it.
I will.
Brooke, how was your week?
It was great.
What'd you do?
Nothing.
Nice. Chris, what about you?
I got to watch some folks who I would maybe consider them not like the hardcore gamer type. Like, you know, no judgments or anything. Just they just don't have that personality. And but I got to watch them play Dokapon Kingdom with Catherine. Geez. And that was fun.
I haven't heard of that.
Oh, you need to play that shit.
Is it a board game, video game?
It is a board game, video game.
Okay, I gotcha.
It's JRPG, board game, video game, where just the worst things happen all the time, and you will lose all your friends.
Oh, what's it called again?
Dokapon Kingdom.
How long did they play, and how close did they come to finishing? Because that's the one
nowhere.
Forever.
I misremembered how long a week is, so I had them set it for 20 weeks. They made it about like 5 or 6 weeks, maybe, and just everybody kind of left.
I will tell you right now, just right off the top, and I'm wondering if you agree with this, Chris. The best aspect to that game is the fact that you can be playing it like 4-player match, right? And everybody's kicking ass, and you're just getting mud hole stomped. Normally, in a board game, you're like, well, I'm just going to have to sit here and wait until the game's over because I'm getting my ass beat. This isn't fun. This game, what you could do is there are special island you can go to. And when you go to that island, you pretty much meet the devil. And he's like, hey, seems like you're not doing too hot. Want to fuck over everybody else and ruin their game too? You're like, yep. So you pretty much have to give them like most of what you've got left. But then for like the next six turns, the game just becomes hell for everyone else. It's amazing.
It's drag him down to your level. And then you get to... It's pretty fantastic. And again, it's one of those things where it's like, it's a brilliant and also terrible idea. But like terrible, like Ivan the Terrible. like terrible. Yeah.
Like, what were you saying? He's like terrible, like what now?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, it was just terrible, like, in the old school, in the biblical sense of terrible.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can beat somebody in a duel. I can't remember what the specifics are, but you can beat them and, like, doodle on their face or change their in-game character name to something horrible and make them deal with it until they can get rid of it.
Yeah.
there's just bizarre things that just make the game awesome. And it's a full RPG map, too. It's not like a Monopoly-style size board. This thing is massive, which is why the game takes so long. Because you go on quests and all that.
I used to play it on the DS a lot. And when I wasn't playing with other people, I was just single player playing it through the storyline. Like, it's actually fun enough that it kind of does work as a legit RPG, which is weird.
That's what I did, too. But Dokapon Journey, I did that. Yeah. And then Dokapon Kingdom, I only played when I could get people together.
Exactly.
It's so good. And, of course, like many games, it ain't cheap to get now.
That's an expensive one.
Yeah. Catherine weirdly found it sealed on PS2 for $99 on eBay because somebody found a box of them.
Really?
Jeez.
Yeah. They're long gone now, but...
It's funny to see how that's cheap.
Yeah, I got it on the Switch back when nobody heard about it, like 2011 or 13 or something.
I mean, the Wii. I was about to say, first I was like, wait a minute, the Switch? Holy shit.
No one had heard about the Switch yet. Yeah, 2011. He was really ahead of things.
Yeah, yeah.
it's a good one. That game, that's one of the games that people don't generally talk about. But its value speaks for itself.
Is like, it on really Switch? Good. Has it gotten any other releases since?
No.
No. Huh.
And the series, well, it might have in Japan because the series goes all the way back to Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
The Japan and board games, they got it right. They're like, for example, Fortune Street. How the fuck we only got one Fortune Street in the States is beyond me.
Because Japan is mad at us for not liking Dragon Quest as much as they do.
That sounds about right. For everybody, talk about how bad
they always withhold like the best Dragon Quest stuff from us because they're like, oh well, they didn't buy enough, you know, Dragon Quest, nine or whatever, so we're gonna hold back Rocket Slime 2, three technically.
I love the Rocket Slime games.
Yeah, the 3DS one was amazing, and they kept it from us. It's never going to come out over here.
I hate how the 3DS is region locked. It's so frustrating.
I agree. Because I would have had a lot of games for that bad boy if it wasn't. Mm-hmm. But like it's. I mean, like for like Fortune Street, like people talk about how bad Monopoly is. I'm like, no, there's ways to fix Monopoly, and Fortune Street did it. And yeah. It's like Monopoly, but it's got multiple routes on a board. It's got a stock market. It's got like cards that actually fucking matter as far as events are concerned. You can legitimately strategize in this game.
It's Mario and Dragon Quest together, like pre Smash Bros.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or Ultimate Smash.
It's freaking gold. Like it's. And I haven't looked at. I wonder if that game is worth any money now.
It's not. It'd be nice.
Probably not. Yeah,
it should be worth more.
I bought it somewhat recently, like within the last year and a half.
So a man with taste, good grab. He is.
Yeah, I was gonna say Wii games weirdly didn't appreciate as much as like DS games, for instance. I mean, some of them are still way too expensive, but like, yeah.
Something that surprisingly was worth a good amount of money is the game PsyOps with the bonus music CD.
Oh, yeah, anytime something has a bonus music CD.
Yeah, I think it was a Target exclusive. It had, like, four songs from the band Cold. So I love the band Cold. I needed to have it. I ended up just selling that in RLH Run Like Hell with a bonus Breaking Ben music CD. $100 for the two of them. And the majority of that is in PsyOps.
So that's the band I'm thinking about. Just good. Yeah, it is that band. Holy shit. Okay, I'll give you that. So you mentioned the band Cold. I've never listened to them per se, or at least I didn't have an album of theirs, but I know of them because they had a song in the U.S. release of Jet Set Radio.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that song was badass. Just got wicked.
Imagine being like...
I got fucked over in a game of Name That Tune on that song.
Oh.
Because I said it was from PsyOps, which it is.
Oh, it's in that game too?
But Tim, you and Matt had it down as a Jet Set.
Came out first.
And I was told I was wrong. And I'm like, you fuckers.
You should have got total credit for that. Like, well, technically, you are right, because it's in both games. Licensed media. Well,
actually.
The rules say that it's the first game it appeared in. So I got zero simpy.
You have to say that in your rules, like, lay out the beginning of the game. Like, if it's in more than one game, it's the first one it appeared in.
Yep.
Damn, you dig, boy.
It's the Smash Brothers rule. Yeah.
Well, that's a good call. He made it clear then. But like, whew. Yeah, Just Got Wicked is a legit good song. Now, man, you got me wondering if I should listen to other shit from the band, which is
I just said it's like one of my favorite bands. You know, like, I wonder if they're any good. No, I listen to shitty bands.
I listen to horrible bands
that do shit music.
Do you listen to Creed?
No.
Okay, that was a litmus test, because there you go.
Really, of course I do. With arms wide open, I listen to them.
Are you really bringing up Creed when we got a Florida person here in the chat?
I'm saying it as a joke, because I did listen to freaking one, and even though I don't stick with the other songs anymore, I will eat the bullet for one jump for one. One step on your road, fuck y'all. And it's great.
I don't think he said that in the song.
He totally did. He totally did. Because he was preempting how people were going to give him shit. He's like, yo.
We need to do reviews. We need to get out of this right now. This is going bad.
Yeah, I'm going to have to jump at 9 if we're not done by then. But I believe in us. I do.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is Spellforce 3 Reforged.
Love you guys.
Tim is just like, we got to cut this now, motherfuckers.
I just realized it wasn't ending.
Tim needs to be asleep right now.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to these. First game to talk about tonight is Spellforce 3 Reforged, developed by Grimlore Games, published by THQ Nordic, released June 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $39.99. Spellforce 3 Reforced is a unique mix of an epic RPG storyline blended with accessible real-time strategy elements designed to offer a riveting console experience to fans and newcomers alike. Cornell, tell us about your time with Spellforce 3 Reforced.
One thing I can say right off the bat with this game is I regret like trying to play it multiple times in a time where I was like, kind of tired, because the both of those times I fell asleep and was like, man, this game is freaking boring. What's the deal? And then I played it one more time at the right time, and that fixed everything, because the game is actually pretty freaking cool. The best way to describe it would be to think about like maybe like Warcraft meets like Baldur's Gate, perhaps, because the way it works is that there's like two elements, like you're basically playing, there's like two different campaigns that the game comes with a third one, which apparently you can buy.
There's a special complete edition that includes those two other campaigns. That's like $59.99, I believe. I'm assuming that they're going to sell them separately, but they weren't live last I checked. So
I'm going to assume they're going to let you buy them, because the third one's on the menu and it says like buy now. I couldn't select it, but that's probably because it's not out yet. But they get pretty much like two, at least off the bat, it's like two to three different campaigns you'll be able to play through. But they're the main game is all I need to talk about in that regard, just in case I'm getting it wrong and that second one isn't available too. But after the prologue of the game, you're pretty much thrust into creating a character who is like related to the main adversary of the prologue. And then you are tasked with engaging in a pretty much a conflict within the country you're living in called Greykeep regarding something called the Mage Wars or the Purity Wars, which are the Purity Wars, the Mage War is over, regarding a country or the world that banned mages because their power unchecked is pretty much insurmountable and destructive. So Gameplay works similar to, like I said, how Baldur's Gate works, where you'll have a party set and you can kind of select them as a complete hub of characters. You can kind of direct where they want to go, walk around the map, and engage in quests and the like. Find objects on the ground, you can investigate them and equip your characters with items that you find, as long as their stats adhere to what they have. And it's a typical boutique of items, rings, you know, like elemental items, like weaponry, armor, shield, or whatever. But the thing that I found interesting about it, though, it took me a little while to get used to it, is the fact that they did a decent job of transitioning this gameplay style to a controller and console. Because unlike something like Baldur's Gate, where you can typically stop the combat, because it's sort of like, oh, it almost feels like turn-based, and you can stop the combat and give commands to your units. And this game is real-time. So when enemies are rushing, you're rushing them, and everybody's just doing the dance of death, having a good old time, unless except for you, because you're having a panic attack trying to make everybody do what you want them to do. But you can do sort of like the enemies, everybody just kind of attacks on their own, but if you hover over the enemies on the board and you hit the right trigger, you get a wheel of all the abilities you have, either access through like the skill tree upgrades or items that you put on quick select or whatnot. And while the game is doing that, it slows down a bit. It doesn't stop, but it slows down and kind of give you a little bit of breathing room. And you can choose skills and activate them on the enemies. And they go through the process of working and then cooling down. And it just keeps going. It flows. But at first, when I got into the wrong sets of combat where enemies were just kind of prevalent, I would occasionally get overwhelmed. Didn't help that I chose a difficulty higher than normal. But nonetheless, it still was kind of like a bit of a rough spot, but I got used to it, and it was better that way. But I found combat to be engaging and a lot of fun. And I do enjoy the aspect of like upgrading the characters, because each character has three skill trees that they can build off of based on who they are, with the exception of your main character, who gets four skill trees. The leadership skill tree, which is specific skills unique to that person, and also three skill trees that you can either choose at the beginning of the game personally, or the game will kind of give them to you based on the starting class you choose. So if you don't want to have a bunch of hands-on effort and like tweaking your character down to the nils, you can just choose a class and the game kind of sets you up and you're good to go, which I appreciate. And it's kind of nice that these skill trees, by way that they do it, they're fairly succinct. So you're not like dealing with like a massive branch out trying to figure out what to do with your character. Instead, each one has a whopping maybe two branches on them. So the actual decisions are based on, if I'm going to work with this skill tree specifically, I'm just going to choose between like left or right, which is a lot easier than like making like five different choices. And since they're specialized trees, it's easier to determine what they're good for, what the skills are good for. So I like that a lot. Of course, equipment is also based around these stats, your stats too. So like if you don't upgrade your stats properly, you can't use specific types of equipment like magic weapons, need a high intelligence, blah, blah, blah. Now, the other aspect of the game that is unique to this game, comparatively to other games like it, is the RTS style, which is where I drew like the kind of the Warcraft comparison. Because every once in a while, you'll get a scenario where instead of progressing through like a dungeon, you're in a larger scale map and you're being tasked with like a scenario such as like, you know, rushing through like a fortress, taking down an enemy army, or defending an area for a certain period of time. And in those scenarios, you'll get, I guess, sort of generic like units that you can put to work in buildings. You can kind of set them to actually, you know, produce resources for you, produce additional buildings, create soldiers, farm for resources on the map. And then as you do that, you can pretty much set them out on the field to actually come to do combat. You can control them and send them to other armies and do battle with them. And while you can press the right thumbstick to select your normal party members, like all as one time, that doesn't work on the units you summon for your, you know, your actual military force. But there is a means to choose like control groups where you can select a group of soldiers, attribute them to the control group, and say, okay, I'm sending you guys over here. I'm sending you guys over here. So it takes a little bit of getting used to. And I kind of sucked at that. Admittedly, I was the guy that was just like kind of going off the handle by mashing the A button, which expanded a circle around my guys, and I could send them where I wanted them to go. But if you're the type that can make generalized tiny control groups instead, they got that for you to do. There's a lot in this game in that regard. Like the games aren't like happy long, like Divinity or whatever, Divinity Vengeful Sin, which is supposed to be a lot longer. But this game, you'll still get, from what I understand, a decent amount of time out of it. I put a fair bit of time into it just from what I could do, and I honestly felt like I was having a good time with it. And I only worked with the main story. I didn't even touch the second campaign, which is available to me too. So
yeah, I believe the base game comes with the main campaign and then the first expansion. And then the two other expansions are available. They are up now. They're available for $20 each, or you can get the complete package for $59.99. So you're saving $20 basically if you get the complete package. I don't see a way to combine purchase the two DLCs for a discount, but maybe a sale will come along. But right now, the game's sitting at $40 for the base game with one of the expansions. What are your thoughts on it?
I feel like this is one of those cases where, like, despite the fact that I clearly stated early on that I did not get to the second campaign or whatnot, I would be comfortable enough to say that the gameplay from the main campaign is a good time. It's a lot of fun. I like the voice work in the game. Again, I wasn't too big on the voice work initially in the beginning part, the prologue, but I think that's also because I just wasn't invested in the game yet because I didn't know who these people were and what their purpose was or whatever. But once the game gets officially rolling, I actually enjoyed the conversation, the lore building, and all that good stuff. So the answer really boils down to, like, do you feel as though you're the type of person who's going to buy this game and, like, want to, like, milk it for everything it's worth? Because if you are, then it's an easy buy all the components because you're going to want to know about the prologue of the game. You're going to want to know about what happened in the side mission that takes place years after the main campaign, which is what one of the purchasable campaigns was. It's pretty much one of, like, no-brainer scenarios. Like, it's the value is there. It's just a matter of you wanting to play that, spend that much time in the world of Spellforce 3, which I think you probably will if this is your cup of tea. So I'd go with a buy.
Cool. Something else we got to mention. Game is gorgeous.
It is nice looking.
Like, I never expect games like this to have a really crisp, vibrant, realistic look to them, and when they do, it's just a visual treat. Like, some of the environments in this game just looked so good.
The only thing that's worth noting, though, I gotta add to that, though, is that they got darkness right. And that could be both a good thing and a bad thing, because there'll be times where you're, like, on the map, like, trying to figure out the route you need to take, and you're like, well, I can't find it. But that's because you got to spin the map around and accept the fact that sometimes you got to look in the darker zones to realize there's an actual path between two sets of trees or between two rock faces. So pay attention to the map and don't just assume that everything's going to be visible from the one camera angle you like have the camera set at. Spin that camera round, right, baby, round, round, like a record, baby, right, round, round.
All right, we're getting a DMCA complaint, so we are being shut down.
Not because of copyright infringement, they're just complaining.
Yeah, they just don't like us.
Hey, I gave them the good kit and caboodle.
All right, next game is called My Lovely Wife, developed by another indie studio, published by Neon Doctrine, released June 8th on the Switch for $14.99. Plays Jake, a loving husband and grieving widow who is granted the knowledge to summon dozens of succubi by mysterious man. Work with these succubi, make them fall in love with you, and then sacrifice them to create a vessel for your wife's soul. Tim, what the hell's going on in this game?
Yeah, what the fuck is going on in this game exactly? Like, yeah. So, yeah. You're this guy, this totally unassuming guy who is super in love with his wife in some old-timey time period. And everything's great until, like, somebody busts into your house and just murders her dead. And you're distraught. You are upset. And in your time of distress, some weirdo guy appears before you and is like, hey, lost your wife, huh? Well, I've been doing research into extracting carnal energy from succubi, and you're gonna help me out now. And you're like, no, I'm not. And you're like, and the guy's like, yes, you are. I already put a pentagram on your bedroom floor. There it is. You're ready to get started. And you're like, what? And then he hands you some shit and you're on your way to summoning demons in your bedroom. So it's not a solution that necessarily I would have jumped into, but let's try to keep an open mind here. You summon up a succubus and it's like, bam, it worked. Wow. Wild. This is crazy. Summoning is a mechanic in the game in which you'll, like, you'll take different materials and you'll drop three of them into the circle, and then one of many, like a couple dozen varieties of succubi, will pop out. But anyways, you got this demon boob lady there with you. And how do you get carnal essence? Well, you got to put that bitch to work. And by that, you gotta up her charm, you gotta up her kink, and then you gotta throw her ass in a brothel. and you know, when presented with this, your unassuming man Jake is like, "Isn't that prostitute?" And somebody cuts him off right there, and it's just like, "Hey, ends justify the means, man." So this ends up being a game of summoning, you know, demonic titty girls, and then pimping them, essentially, to the local village, in order to accrue carnal energy on this path to resurrecting your wife. Okay? All right.
Gotcha.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. I'm dying over here. I'm muted, like, so I won't interrupt your review, but, like, this is... I'm sorry you had to go through this for us, but this is really entertaining.
So, as it turns out, unlike what the song says, pimping actually is pretty easy. So, eventually, as things go on, you can eventually have up to five succubi in your busted house. And I say busted house because, like, all the rooms are fucked up until you pay this guy, the mystery guy, who is apparently also a contractor, to fix up the room so you can put more demon titty bitches up in your house. So anyways, eventually you get like a little, you know, ho squad. And once you do that, you have to manage them and upgrade their capabilities. So there's not really a whole lot to do here with this. Like in the town, there is a charm school that will upgrade their charm. There's a kink school that will... You know, I don't know, make them kinkier in the brothel. There is a hotel that you send them to where they can engage in like singing or dancing or various forms of entertainment. And then there is the aforementioned brothel, at which point you, you know, they do the thing and they get the carnal energy and some money, too, because money is important. From the hotel, they get more money, less carnal energy. And so... yeah, like each facility has like four different options to it, but there's only going to be one available to you up front. You have to spend money to unlock more of them, and at which point you can start assigning multiple succubi to, you know, a building at the same time. Problem is, earning money early on is a drag. It takes a while. Like, yeah, upgrading, you know, you have to pay for, you know, a bit for charm school and kink school. But once you kind of build up the stats of your succubi, they start pulling in more money and more carnal energy. And then you can, but it's still like, it was a grind before I really started like unlocking more options. And then it just kind of like snowballed at a certain point. So it's like in the back third of my playthrough, it's just like I was earning gobs of money, but for the first two thirds I was like scrimping and saving and like trying to, you know, had to be very tactful with where I was spending my money to an unnecessary degree, I believe. Now, as far as objectives, there will be some overarching objectives. Like number one on the list is this dude is like, yo, get some carnal energy in these ladies and then send them up to my house and I will suck the energy out of them for my nefarious experiments. And you're like, okay, dude, cool. if you go to your girls' bedrooms, you can chat them up. And sometimes they will have like little objectives for you. Like each girl has each like species of succubi, I guess I should say, cause it's related to that and not like the individual, character, will have like their kind of own preferences. So they will have like different things like, oh, they're just like, ah, I don't want to go to charm school today. Or like, oh, keep me away from the brothel because maybe I don't want to whore myself out today. Go figure. Or they'll be like, hey, can you summon this other type of succubus, which is where things get complicated, partially because the only way I could get to, there is a like dex that keeps track of all the species that you've summoned, but you have to like back out to the main menu to look at it. I couldn't find it anywhere within the game. So I'd have to like save and back out and look at it and then be like, okay, whatever. And when there's like world events, like, oh man, there's like officials that are, you know, approaching the brothel. Like, do you looking for illicit activity? Do you tell them to end the session and sacrifice some money, or do you just keep going and try to keep it quiet? And your girl may react one way or the other, about that. Eventually, man. Okay. So first thing, when you start up this game, there is a warning about depictions of like domestic violence, in the game, which I was kind of like, what's that about? I was like, are you going to kill your lovely wife, the titular lovely wife? And it's like, no, somebody else does that. So what's going on here? And at a certain point, like, ya boy is like, hey, you need to extract this carnal energy yourself to work on your personality. He doesn't say it like that, but like, once you have carnal energy, you're putting it onto like a stat grid to upgrade like your, I don't know, your fucking intelligence and level of seduction and your bravery and that kind of stuff. But to get that, you will grab one of your succubus prostitutes and you will stab them with a dagger, murdering them and taking their energy. And it's not like a, I don't like a, like nothing about this game is like cheeky. I guess I'd say, despite kind of like all the absurdity of the premise, and like it plays it, I don't want to say completely straight, but straighter than it should for a game in which you're pimping demonic succubi and then stabbing them for their energy and just like murdering them dead cold in your house, is weird. And then you get to the point where it's like, you know, you have to build up, you know, a succubi's affection with your character. You got to make them like you, which they will do inherently, like if they agree with kind of your decisions, and there's certain other things you can do to upgrade their affection. Or you can take them on dates in the park, which costs a lot of fucking money. and, you know, again, it's just it's like I get into the cycle where it's like, well, I'm trying to get this girl to like me, but she's so full of carnal energy. I have to murder her. to get her dying. Essence to make myself
like over here
more
selective. What pancakes,
and it's just like, okay, whatever. But yeah, so once you get a succubus to be fully affectionized by you, you can then, yes, ladies and gentlemen, fuck her. And what do you do after you fuck her? Anybody want to guess?
You stab her
with the dagger. You murder her ass dead and take her essence. What the fuck is going on in this game? I don't play a lot of games like this. You know, I like, at a glance, I thought this was going to be some sort of like cheeky succubus dating sim, not like a non-cheeky succubus pimp and murder sim. I was inspired by listening to Brooke talk about Arcade Spirits, and I was like, I'm gonna try something different here.
Oh no, I did this to you, Tim.
No, it's good. It's great. But the thing is, so there's only, you know, let's get down to the tax of, you know, the essence of playing the game. There's only so many things you can do with these ladies on a daily basis, and it gets really repetitive really fast, and you're just like grinding through these days, because each day only has so many hours, the activities take so many hours, and then when you're done for the end of the day, then you go back to your house. But it's just like, okay, I'm going to put you here, you there, you know, work on some charm, work on some kink, send someone to the brothel, send someone over here, get money, get carnal essence. Okay. Then cycle it again. It's just like, I was just like ripping through these days so fast. And there is a button for speeding up time, but I was like constantly like hitting it to the fastest level and then pausing and then waiting. And then the meters go up and then like backing out. But then it's just like, you know, just going through like multiple days of just like trying to earn up enough money for the next thing I needed to buy, or getting enough carnal essence so that I could murder this girl who loves me against all odds. Because they're all pretty distrustful of you the second they come out. And it's just like, so it's not,
I wonder why.
Yeah. It's not compelling from like a gameplay standpoint. It's really just like spinning a couple plates. Like, there's not enough plates to spin to make it feel like a really engaging, like, juggling act. And, like, some days it's like, oh no, like, charm school's closed. Well, I'll send them to the other three places. It's not the end of the world or other four places, you know, whatever. It's not that big a deal. And it's like, oh, some days you'll get more money from sending them to the hotel. And it's like, fine, great. I was sending them to the hotel, like, all goddamn day anyways. Like, gotta get that money, get that paper, get that bread. So it was not especially compelling from, like, a gameplay perspective in terms of just, like, managing your resources and your characters. And from a story perspective, it is just completely baffling as to, like, why someone would... I mean, obviously, this is somebody's kink, because everything is. But just, like, why you put the disclaimer up front, and it's just, like, so much... just stabbing the ladies you keep in your house, and it's just like, just leaves a bad taste. And it's like, why is the, like, I just don't know. It seems like, yeah, I don't know, man. I just don't know.
Mel, it's $14.99. Do you know what people should do about it?
They should forget this whole well, they should remember this conversation for the sake of not buying the game, but otherwise they should just forget the game exists.
Oh, wow.
That's probably a little harsh, but I just like, unless this is very specifically up your horny alley, I would give it a big old skipperoonie, because it's like a, yeah, it's not there as like a, game.
Harsh.
Of you know, that I think is going to be, like, really exciting or interesting to engage with, and then from a content perspective, it's just like, what the hell is going on here? I'm not, like, offended. I'm more just baffled. Like, why? Like, I feel like there's better ways. There was ways to, like, ease this, you know, to make this work in a more fun and goofy sort of way to match the premise. But it's just kind of like. And your guy's just kind of going along with it. Like, he's just like, yeah, this is all fucked up. I guess I love my wife enough to, like, summon succubi, pimp them out, and then stab them in my house.
Yeah. He's going to get his wife back. She's going to be like, I never wanted this. Please let me go back to where I was. I
could tell you what happens, but that would be a spoiler. Ooh,
okay.
Yeah, you don't want to spoil a game like this.
There's endings in the game, like, I'm sure.
Like, 40 endings to the game.
Yeah,
there's wow, that's nuts.
Yeah, but I definitely got it.
We were just told to skip a Rooney, so you'll have to tell us after the episode's over.
Yeah, I could venture guesses as to, like, what pads out that amount of endings, and I don't think they'd be that drastically different. Like, I think there's probably an ending for, like, falling in love and deciding to forgo your wife in favor of a succubus for, like, every variety of succubus that there is, of which there is quite a few. I'm sure that is a lot of them. But yeah, like, in the actual, unless I am missing a huge part of this game, but I spent a good amount of time with it and was not seeing those branches that intrigued me. Either way, it's like there's just not that much stuff to do.
I like that Brooke's, like, trying something new is, you know, arcade center romance, and then Tim's like murdering prostitutes.
You know, can't judge a book by its cover.
This does raise a lot of questions as to whether murdering a woman counts as domestic violence in Japan, or if that's, like, different. That would explain some of the...
This is what happens when, like, Joe sends me games during the day, and I look at, like, the trailer for about 15 seconds and read, like, a sentence of the synopsis, and yeah. Just be like, yeah, sure, what the fuck?
Well, I read the synopsis of this game, too, and I didn't know if it was going to be super fun or what. I watched, like, 30 seconds of the gameplay and art on YouTube, and I thought it looked really good, so, like, thanks for taking the bullet for everybody.
Resurrected dead wife sounds like a great time, a noble effort. How do I do it? Oh God!
I'm sorry, you went through that, but I think it was worth it so we could get the pimpin' ain't easy joke. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that.
It was definitely not the worst thing I've ever reviewed. I'm not, like, angry. I'm just more confused. Like, some games I review and I don't recommend, and I am furious at what you have done with my time. But this was at least puzzling as I tried to figure out, like. Like, what was going on?
Yeah, it's not the worst thing you ever reviewed for that. The next game to talk about, no.
Yeah. Let's go.
That would suck if it was the next one. But no, the next one is actually a preview, so you can't review this one. This is just a preview of The Tarnishing of Juxtia, developed by Actual Nerds, published by Mastiff. It's releasing summer 2022 on Steam and is available to wishlist right now. As the final creation of the goddess Juxtia journey through the ruins of two divine kingdoms overrun by the Tarnishing. Challenging combat, a hauntingly beautiful score, and a sinister narrative work in unison to make The Tarnishing of Juxtia an unforgettable 2D dark fantasy action RPG. Tim, that's a lot of descriptors for one game. How's it hold up?
Well, I mean, they are puffing on the Dark Souls dog whistle there. I talked to Brooke about this before the show last week. I'm like, yeah, the game's called The Tarnishing of Juxtia. Like, when you're throwing around tarnishing around Elden Ring and talking about your dark fantasy, and it's just, you know, I know what I'm looking for, and people know what they're looking for when they're trolling for these games, and this is it. Make no mistake. But I have found this Tarnishing of Juxtia to be pretty cool in its demo form. Yeah, this is a like 2D Metroidvania kind of deal. Will
Pernell's find favorite genre.
Yeah, you will find a good news. There's some things that make it unique.
unique.
Not really, but it does some things. It combines elements well. I would say, but yeah, you will find these Soulsy elements of like, oh, there's a dodge roll that is very important for your defense. Like, oh, when you die, you leave a thing there with all your stuff and you need to go back and retrieve it. And, you know, bonfires are fountains and such. Just kind of like those basic things that I'm just like, okay, well, I know where you got that from, but it's fine. Yeah, the things that stood out to me is they give you a lot up front, and I don't know if this was just the demo or this is the way it's going to be in the full game. I hope it's the way it is in the full game, and that like they give you a bunch of different weapons like up front in the game to try out and see what you like. They give you, you know, a magic spell right up front in the game to try out and see if you're like kind of going to dig magic. Cause that's kind of a thing with the, you know, Souls type games, is that like you'll pick your class, and this, there is no class picking. You're just a dude and you get your basic stuff, but there's that kind of like paranoia, like FOMO, just like, am I doing the right thing? Like, should I be putting points into this? Like, do I want to invest in order to use this spell? Do I want to invest in order to wield this weapon? But this doesn't have any kind of like stat requirements for any of that shit. You can just use it, and just upgrading your stats makes them better. And that is a good thing that stands out to me, because then you can try out weapons, see how they feel, and be like, no, I'm not gonna kind of spec towards this, or yes, I am. So just, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I tried out at least, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 weapons in the early parts of this game, and settled upon a couple that I liked. It does let you equip 2 and hot switch between them, which is nice. I really like the feel of the magic spell. And how that works, like your MP regenerates slowly over time. It does have a mechanic where like you're in battle and I think your character gets kind of like a bloodlust, and then your stamina and your MP will start like recharging much faster. So that's a cool thing that rewards being aggressive. You will get to, you know, this game's bonfire equivalent, which is a fountains. And it has 2 different kinds. It has like little mini fountains that just like restore your health and act as checkpoints. And then there's like bigger ones where you can do those other 2 things, but also like upgrade your stats by investing the, you know, the experience you're getting around the way. I think investing points into stats provided, you know, significant upgrades. It wasn't just like, oh, you know, if I put, you know, 4 points into this, I'll see a difference. It's like, no, if you put 4 points into something, you'll see a big difference. Like, I noticed that, especially when I was upgrading my health. Like, I put in 4 points and my health went up like 200 points. And before it was like 350, and then it was up to 550. I'm like, wow, that's a lot. This is a good feeling investment of stat points. That feels great. I think kind of like the, you know, the game has a good look to it, like a nice kind of like gritty pixel art style. Like, the world is cool. It is kind of that sort of dark fantasy, you gotta like puzzle out the lore sort of deal going on. I do feel like the character movement is a little weird. They have like a ledge grab that just kind of looks a little wonky because your character kind of swings around a little bit and suddenly appears to be like light as a feather. But I think it's a good thing to have in the game where you have to platform, and makes it easier to just not miss your jumps. That's good. The best thing I can say about this game is I got to a certain point in the demo and I was like, I don't want to play this anymore because I want to wait for the full game. Like, I don't want to get too invested in this and then have to replay a bunch of shit. Like, I've kind of already, this game has sold itself to me at this point as something that I want to check out. So, yeah.
So this sounds like something people should definitely keep their eyes on and throw on the wish list.
Throw on the wish list for sure. Yeah, it seems like a legit, interesting game and not just kind of like a pretender trying to get your attention with, you know, with the like, we're like Souls, check us out, you maniacs who can't stop playing these games.
All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim.
Oh man, it's 11. Yep.
Yeah, it's 11. We got to keep
doing
this.
He's got some murdering to do.
Yeah, I got
to. I'm going to go murder some succubi.
My lovely wife.
I'm going to go ahead and murder a couple succubi. Try to, you know. I love that moment in your review where you're like kink school, where you can, you know, I don't know. That was so funny. It was like so much of that review was funny.
Well, thank you.
All right, you got any final words?
No, I don't. I bid you all good night and good reviews.
Night, I'll see you guys
next week.
All right.
Night. Later.
Next game to talk about is Dead Craft, developed and published by Marvelous Inc. Released May 19th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Sorry. Farm the dead to stay alive in Deadcraft, the new twist on the zombie survival action genre. As a half-zombie, grow an army of loyal undead followers and build an arsenal to equip them to take revenge on the rulers of humanity's last city. Purnell and Chris, both of you guys played this one. Who wants to start?
Not it.
Purnell, tell us about Deadcraft.
I love how he's like, not him. Like, this would have been your first game tonight. But anyway, I no biggie. No biggie. I could do that. So, Deadcraft, I will give as probably my most played game of this week because I was addicted to it. It's essentially, it's a game where you are playing as a man who is a half man, half zombie. And in the apocalypse, apparently no one's ever seen this before, but you're going to get a heaping load of it now because
the circumstances around becoming a half human, half zombie do seem pretty unlikely. So
I guess that is true, but still someone has to have done it. I mean, you meet a guy early on who's a full zombie with human sentience. So I was like, there's gotta be something. But basically like in this game, you have to put this to excellent use because you are exploring this wasteland trying to get revenge on a group of people who pretty much murdered your friend for more or less and also tried to like pretty much ruin your life through experimentation and manipulation and kidnapping. It was a bad scene. But the way that this is done is that you are pretty much living in a rusted, rundown shack outside of the main enemy stronghold. And
which is palatial versus what other people are living in.
That is true. You live in a slum. They live in the slums.
Yeah. I was like, hey, this house isn't actually that bad. This is about $2,500 a month in Austin.
It's got a roof. It has got farmland. Actual farmland. It starts with it. But at the very, very beginning of the game, once these get started, you are immediately beset with the concept that you have to survive you need to eat and drink water to survive. It's interesting because you're running around on a top-down exploration map style with action RPG elements, but if you go hungry, like if you get hungry and you don't match your deal with your hunger level, you will start to lose health very quickly. However, if you start to get thirsty and your thirst level drains out, you start to get blurred vision and you are completely unable to see the screen. It's really bad. Like, wow. It's not an easy thing to just be like, well, I'll just, cause some games you can just pretty much like weather the storm and deal with it. In this game, no, if you go thirsty, you are fucked. So, And the funny thing about it, too, at least how I felt, I wonder how Chris felt, too, is early on, it's surprisingly tough to find the means to get good water to stay healthy. Like, it was, yes. There was a bit of work I had to put in to pull that off. The way you do this is as you're exploring the world map, there's an actual clock that's ticking. And that's when all your gauges are draining. That's your hunger, your water, and also your energy levels, which is just how much energy you can exert throughout the day. Because every single action you do, from running to walking to picking up items on the ground to attacking enemies with a weapon, they all consume energy. And while there are items that can replenish your energy, they are far and few, even with craft. Acting. So you are not intended to just like kind of stick it out all day long until you boost your stats up through the skill tree. So yeah. You're like kind of being very selective on what you can do throughout the day, picking up items or whatever, and amassing resources to kind of make the day go by. But eventually, you start to get into the groove of things. You start finding good resource items. You start finding the means to craft good items through the tutorial and also just through your skill tree. You start to get items that allow you to do things like, I don't know, produce like purified water, cook rat meat so you can actually eat rat meat that doesn't poison you.
Yay, rat meat.
Yay.
And you start
Oh, there's so much rats in this too. Game.
Oh, there are a lot of rats.
This game was funded by Big Rat.
Squeak squeak. Shit, they got to you too, didn't they? But like, so now I'm gonna mention a few more like pretty basic things, then I'm gonna get to the thing that makes this game fairly stand out. So as you're producing items and vegetables and food and weapons through crafting mechanics and whatnot, you will be taking on quests in the city, the slum area too, whether it be on the mission board or from like individual people that you come across in the city. It can involve killing a number of gang members, killing monsters, just delivering items, you know, the usual rigmarole. And as you complete these quests, you'll get resources, you'll get money, which you can spend at shops that are open and closed on certain days of the week. And they also have sales and restock period, which I actually kind of like. I was building a schedule around like when I can go buy like, you know, driftwood, and then when they run out, they'll like restock and they'll come back, they'll go on sale, bam, just clean them out, just buy everything they got in stock. But you'll be doing that kind of stuff too, and managing a schedule there. But the thing that makes this game particularly stand out, aside from all the stuff we were talking about, is the fact that in addition to growing crops and and things, you also grow zombies on your farmland. When you eventually start to learn that due to your weird and unique powers, you have the ability to grow zombies and control them. It's pretty weird, but I went with it and I was happy that I did. Because what ends up happening, in order to do this, you have to actually craft zombie seeds, which you then have to plant in the ground along with the actual corpse that you've looted from the ground, like from the exploration. Corpses actually come from killed humanoid enemies. Now, there are different types of weapons in the game, like axes and bats and stuff. And if you kill enemies with an axe, you're less likely to get a good corpse. If you kill them with a physical, like a blunt object, then yeah, that corpse might be fresh and plentiful or useful for your, you know, zombie growing needs. Depending on the corpse of the enemy you get determines the actual stats of the corpse you grow from the earth. Once you've watered it with zombie blood for a couple of days and also planted it, it's surprisingly interesting. I actually was really interested. I'm going to farm myself some dead people, going to kill some dicks.
Which is funny because in the movies, you always see the zombies coming out of the ground, but you don't see every day that person coming through and like watering the ground with the zombie blood and stuff to make it happen.
Yeah.
And this also really does show you the other side of a zombie apocalypse.
I think what I found funny, too, is that even though I initially did it by accident, the game does eventually tell you you can, but I was happy by doing it accidentally. You can water crops with water, which, again, is hard to come by, or zombie blood, which is very plentiful because zombies are there, you're there with an axe, blah, blah, blah. But once, by accident, I watered a tomato with zombie blood instead of water. And I was like, oh, fuck, I ruined the tomatoes. I really needed good tomatoes. Turns out, you want to do that sometimes because you get freaky vegetables, which actually have actual effective properties like healing and zombification. Because one more thing that we have yet to mention is the fact that your zombie status actually plays a role in the game, too. As you're playing throughout the game, you're constantly bouncing between your zombie state and your humanoid state. The more zombified you are, the higher your attack power, but the lower your defense. In addition to that, you expend some of your zombie energy to do special zombie attacks, which is pretty funny, but effective in combat because you sweep the freaking board with that shit. But if you become too zombified, humans will freak out and try to kill you. They'll also try to kill you if you become wanted by murdering gang members in the street and whatnot. But that,
I thought the gang members were free reign.
Nah, there's like a time, well, maybe they're not gang members, but it was like the Arcanites. And I had a mission where he was like, the guy was like, I really get sick of these stupid Arcanites. It'd be nice if somebody put them in their place. And the mission was like, kill three Arcanites. I was like, fine, I'll do that. And I went to kill them. My water level skyrocketed. It was like 4 stars. Bim, bim, bim. I was like, well, everybody hates me now. I was just doing my civic duty. And now everyone wants to kill me. This is stupid. Get them zombie minions. Fuck them. but it was actually really nice to sit there and play around with it. Like, I was really addicted to playing this game. I enjoyed, like, you know, going back and forth. I probably spent way more time than I was supposed to in a number of areas of the game because I was trying to be super efficient. Like, if I didn't feel comfortable with my level of energy, I would just skip the entire day in favor of going back to bed. But I was having a great time with this. You even have the whole, like, buying and building a storage shed because you have a limited inventory slot space and whatnot. I think this game is legitimately fun. And if you get in the skill tree, I forgot to mention too, the skill tree is divided amongst like 5 categories, like survival and weapon construction and like stat building and all that. And it's extensive. Like, there is a lot of upgrading to do in this game. And fortunately, they're not cheap on the skill points. So even someone like me has no need to hoard it. You'll just get more. So it always feels like you're growing. I had a lot of fun with this game. It's good. Legitimately good.
Chris, what did you think of what did you think of your time with the game?
I agree that it's good, but I didn't get as far or as addicted as Purnell. I spent a lot of time struggling through the beginning of the game, and because, like, for me, it's one thing to have, like, I misunderstood the game for a long time, and I thought, oh, well, I need to gather these SP points, you know, and stuff, so I better go out and kill some more zombies. And then I just, like, kind of found myself, like, I could kill 1 or 2 zombies, drink a bunch of sludge, eat a rotten rat, and then go to bed at 1 p.m. And I was like, this ain't no life for a half zombie. And, you know, by the time I even started crafting, I was already, like, I barely had enough energy to, like, drag myself into town to even find the guy that's like, oh, hey, by the way, you can cook, you can build a fire pit. By lighting some wood on fire, and then you can cook a rat. And I was like, cooked rat, the dream.
The dream, because half the people in town came and cooked fucking rat. There's one lady who straight up says multiple times, she's like, if only I could build a junk screen, I could actually drink good water. But the junk screen's recipe is, like, fairly easy to acquire stuff in that world. It's like, how are you not building this shit yourself? I learned about it by investing SP points. Why don't you invest SP points to build a drug screen?
You know, these are people who run scared from zombies all the time. So, which, by the way, I realized eventually that I was like, if I'm going to make any progress in this game, I'm just going to run past every zombie. And so I started doing that, and then I was like, okay, now I'm making progress. So, like, this game has a great, it really turns the genre, you know, of what it purports to be, it kind of turns that on its ear in that you're not out there just hacking and slashing other zombies on a, you know, terrible revenge mission. It's kind of like Zombie Harvest Moon, you know?
Yes, 100%.
You've got to compartmentalize, you've got to plan, you've got to schedule, you've only got so much of the day before you're just, like, you know, a crawling, drooling idiot because you haven't fed yourself anything but rotten rats for a month. And so, like, I really appreciate that about it, but appreciation doesn't mean I'm good at it. So it did feel like it was a little bit of a hill for me, but I will say that, yeah, mirroring what Purnell said, once you get over that hump, then it's a great ride. And and I think that that's something that people should know going into this game, is that don't go in, you know, again, the game's not going to tell you, like, straight up, like, oh, just don't bother fighting those zombies or whatever. Like, they really kind of pump you up for killing zombies, and then, you know, you try to do that.
I think the best way to think about it is, like, to kind of treat it like you would in an actual zombie movie, which is, like, there's tons of zombies out there, and you need to do some shit. But you only have so much energy. Are you going to stay out in the middle of the street just beating zombies until you get tired and they'll just overcome you and then you're dead?
Exactly,
or you want the shit done? Leave the fuckers alone. They're not meant. They're meant to be obstacles, not to be fun punching bags.
Exactly. So, it's a marathon, not a race. So, but that's brilliant, honestly. So, you know, that is I say this is also a buy it. I just say, folks, you know, who are getting into it, like, really, it is like a farming sim more than it is an action game. So, like, kind of treat it more like that, you know, get those recipes early, start building those, you know, start dumping those SP points into crafting and, you know, build yourself a nice little, what do you call it? Like a, I don't want to say loadout, but like, I don't know, a support system. Let's call it that.
I will say one last thing though, for anybody listening to what we just said and thought, well, I wanted a game that involved more action and less farming. I wish there were more action in this game. My statement to you is that, yeah, early on it's exactly like we're saying. You gotta get yourself set up. You need a junk screen. You need a fire pit. You need a decent set of crop building so you can build some zombies. But once you've invested some skill points and got your health meter up, and you've learned to actually go to bed on a full stomach or a full glass of set of water, because the more full you are when you go to bed, the more energy and health you wake up with the next day. Like the more you get that routine going, eventually you are going to become that guy that's like, fuck this, I got a nailed bed, I got like a zombie army behind me, I'm just going to start wrecking shit. And you will wreck shit, and then your issue will be you ran out of inventory space carrying zombie blood and zombie brains around. So
exactly, yeah.
Whole new problem.
Which, by the way, one thing that I love about it is, okay, so, you know, like I said, you can eat rotten rats and it's like they will put food in your stomach technically, but it's also going to, like, do a bunch of damage and stuff. You could always counteract that damage by doing drugs.
Drugs are good, kids.
Heaven's blessing. Heaven's blessing. And then you drug the heaven's blessing, and it gives you more health, and you become zombified from it.
Oh, Jesus.
It's freaking great.
All right, so the game is $25. There is a deluxe edition that comes with two DLC packs. One's available now. It is post-game content, so you have to beat the main storyline to get to it. It also comes with a bonus shinobi outfit and a resource pack that has a bunch of extra goodies to get you started. That is $40 for the deluxe edition. Is it worth dropping the extra money for the deluxe pack and getting the DLC and the bonuses, or should people just stick with the $25 and take it as it comes?
Cam, stick with the $25 personally. Stick with that $25 bucks. Learn you like the freaking game first, and if you're willing to play through it. I mean, the DLC, you'll get when you get it. And I'm always of the type where, like, if you really feel like you need the resource pack, you can always go back and get it later. And if the resource pack isn't available outside of the deluxe edition, well, I guess you need it that much. and the same with the in-game content. When you beat the game and you feel like, okay, I like this game enough to actually play through the whole thing and not move on to the next shiny object, well, then you buy the in-game content, and you're still happy because you actually use what you paid for.
Yeah, and I'm seeing that, like, the you can get the deluxe edition, but, like, the only a la carte DLC that you can get is the It Came From the Junkyard, which is, yeah, like, some post-game content.
Yeah, that's the first of the two DLC packs that are...
Yeah, the other one is not available by itself.
Yeah.
Go to school hard enough. Deal with it. Learn how to make your own junk screen. You don't need the man to give you a hookup.
Maybe you do.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about. We got to move on. You guys are going to talk about rat screens the whole damn night. Next game to talk about is Lamplight City, developed by Grundislav Games, published by Ash Games, released June 2nd on Switch and PC for $14.99. For police detective turned private investigator Miles Fordham, Lamplight City's shadowy corners are just a part of the territory. But with his former partner constantly speaking to him from beyond the grave, his grip on sanity is slowly loosening. Can Miles find justice for his clients and track down his partner's killer before his entire world comes apart? Brooke, tell us about your time in Lamplight City.
Ooh, well, I had a really good time with this game. You know, I think I talked about this on the show last year. I at least bugged Purnell about it at some point. But last year, I got to play this really awesome board game I'd never tried before, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. It came out in the 80s. I adored this game. First evening I tried it, I already adored it. I didn't even finish the case I was on, but I knew it was just a really good game. Found it to be incredibly fun and cool. This company's lucky that I had that experience, because within about an hour of cracking this bad boy open, and by cracking, I mean downloading from the Switch eShop, starting a new save, I was like, this game is definitely inspired by some classic point-and-click mystery adventure games that we grew up with, plus Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. If the devs or anything listen to this review, please let me know if I'm right about this. This is like making me very antsy. But I think I've got this one. It just reminds me of that setup in game so much. It reminds me of all our favorite vintage point-and-click adventure games, specifically the Indiana Jones Atlantis game I keep going on and on about, and I will never shut up about every time I review a new point-and-click for the show for us. So that's what this is. It's a point-and-click mystery adventure mixed with extra immersive stuff like newspapers to read that may or may not have information that helps you, sprawling grids of city maps that we don't normally get in your run-of-the-mill point-and-click mystery adventure. And both the maps and the newspapers are styled like Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. So I think that this game is, it's not trying to pretend it's not inspired by that game. I think it's kind of got a love letter thing going on to it. And that definitely got me very excited when I thought that was going on. So this game, my take here is that, it is that love letter to point-and-click mystery adventures from our childhoods. It's a love letter to Sherlock Holmes CS board game. And the combo of the two, for me, make this game so much better for it. That even though I haven't finished the game yet, I'm playing it now, by the way, regular Brunel over here. I think the formula of this game gives us an improvement on both types of games. Like, when you combine them, this became way more fun than just a point-or-click adventure for me, and it became way more fun for me than Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is for me. Although part of the reason I like the board game is because it is like co-op, so you're playing with other people. What I'm trying to say is the parts are probably better on both fronts separately than what I think the inspirations were, and I believe the sum of those parts is better overall for them being combined. So this is, in my mind, this is an achievement for sure. I'm very impressed by this game, if you can't tell. But I'll also take a second just to remind us and myself, in defense of the games I'm talking about, this game, Lamplight City, this originally came out in 2018, I believe. This is a Switch release of the 2018 game. Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective board game came out in the 80s. Indiana Jones point and click that I'm talking about with Atlantis came out in 92. So I'm not dissing some of my favorite media here by admitting that I think this one's better. I'm just kind of putting it into context of it can do this because it's built upon them and came out later. Okay, I've now calmed myself back down and finished the argument I was having with myself. Back to the review. So what makes this game so good, other than everything I just talked about? Well, since it didn't come out in the 80s or 90s like the games that I'm mentioning, the folks writing this game had an opportunity to do a more modern... It's set in the 1800s, but the tone of the game and the environment is just really modern, gritty, very dark, but extremely funny. I was laughing my ass off the whole time. Extremely funny take on the old school 1800s detective thing that we keep revisiting with Sherlock Holmes stuff. And this isn't Sherlock Holmesy at all, outside of being a game set in the 1800s about a detective. The writing for this game rules, it's hilarious, but it's not too goofy of a game. It has some really serious stuff going on there, but it's written so, so well that we get to enjoy both of those vibes without them cheapening each other. That's always awesome, and to me, just a mark of really good writing. So, on that note, before I talk a bit more about the game mechanics and gameplay and stuff, let me introduce the premise here. The game opens up, you're a detective, your name is Miles, you're part of a dynamic crime-solving duo made up of you and your partner. But unlike in Sonic the Hedgehog, your name is Miles and you're not the sidekick in your partnership. You are the senior detective in the partnership. And it's not very hard to see why. Your partner, Bill, is total drunk. He's a fuck up. He's always cracking inappropriate jokes. He's always trying to get out of work early so he can go right back to getting wasted. Y'all have a really good straight man, goofball dynamic thing going on. And you're definitely the straight man out of the two of you. Bill, he's totally shameless. He is riotously, just outrageously funny to me. And he is acted by, he's voice acted by, this guy is, he's in my top five video game voice actors of all time. As soon as this game started, I was looking this guy up to see if I knew him from just being in movies or voice acting. I don't, but this dude's voice is amazing. Hold on, I pulled up his name. Al Pagano. He hasn't done a ton of stuff. He's been in some TV and movies. I'm a huge fan of this guy, but let me not get too sidetracked here. Let me get back to the notes. Okay, so Bill's not got a lot going for him, except for he's hilarious and he has a beautiful voice. I could listen to that character talk all day, man. And good thing too, because as Joe let us know from reading us the intro blurb, Bill dies. And then he's by your side forever for the rest of the game while you solve mysteries from beyond the grave. He is now the voice in your head. are you crazy, or is magic and or ghosts real? That's unclear, and the game is definitely doing that on purpose, by the way. And whether or not magic is real or not is not an issue you only come across because of Bill's death in this universe. And that's all I'll say about that. Wait, I'll also say I'm hours in right now, and I still don't know if magic is real or not in this universe, which is awesome. Okay, that's all I'll say about that. So Bill's dead. Here's how it happened. In your first hour of gameplay, y'all are assigned a new case. You go to the flower shop to investigate a recurring robbery that's been reported. When you get there, the owner of the shop is like, God damn it, I told my assistant not to report these robberies. Yeah, they're weird, but they're not really a crime. Once a week, somebody breaks in here, steals all the Easter lilies, but they're always gone before we get here, and the money's always waiting for us on the table. They're breaking and entering, but they're not breaking anything. We don't know how they're getting in and out. But they're paying for the flowers, so this isn't really a problem. Well, too bad. This is back in the 1800s when cops actually had to follow the rules and act like they give a shit no matter what. Because even though this is a crime that isn't an actual problem and you and your partner know it, you still have to investigate it a while. Ultimately, decide to stake the place out that night. You catch the shadowy figure in the act, but after chasing him to the roof, you make a choice. And maybe, probably because of that choice, Bill falls and dies. Off the roof. He falls off the roof and dies. You get it. The game opens back up, and it's in the future. Now the person who's drinking all the time, fucking up, making everyone uncomfortable, is you, because you're a haunted, broken man who can't even solve the mystery of why a flower thief, who always paid for the flowers he stole, would have rather shot you and your partner dead than be detained for questions. So, don't worry, Bill's jokes are still inappropriate and hilarious. He now has a bunch of new jokes featuring a lot of material about his own death. That's always nice. Neat. He even comments that while he's always with you these days and he can't seem to leave your side, even though he really wants to move on, you know, he's polite. He never looks when you and your wife are having special private times. To which you respond, well, I wish you wouldn't hum the whole time then. To which he responds, ah, sorry, I just thought, you know, you might like some nice music. And now, it's either a few months or a few years later, I actually can't remember, but the camera comes back on, you're unshaven, you have your hair grown out, you're a wreck. You're still solving mysteries, even though you never solved that one about Bill. But it's as a private investigator, because the police won't have you anymore. Since we all know that the police won't let you keep being a police officer if you're dangerous or mentally challenged, which are two things the police definitely check for before giving you a gun.
Yeah.
Those are the good old days, the 1800s.
Once upon a time.
Man. So yeah, this is, how much is this, $14.99 you said?
Yeah, the game is sitting at $14.99. What are your thoughts on it?
This is a buy it for sure for me. If you couldn't tell that I was going to say that, this is definitely worth the money. Even with the art looking a little retro and definitely being like that pixely point and click stuff that we remember from our childhoods, I would pay at least $25 for this. I think this is an awesome experience. I have so many point and click mystery adventure games. I have so many that I still want to finish that I love dearly that I can't seem to make the time for. That being said, this review's over, but I'm playing this game tonight, you guys. This art, it's awesome. It's great for what it is. They're doing a shitload with very little considering. If you liked The Last Door, aesthetically, this is a lot like that game, which I loved. It reminds me a lot of The Last Door ambiance, even, but it's doing a lot more than that art. It's just kind of got that feeling to it. I adore that game, but I think this is a better game, even though they're a little different. Mechanics, I mean, the music is awesome. The voice actors are amazing. It's not just the guy who voices Bill. Every single one of the voice actors I've encountered so far blew me out of the water. It really made me wonder, like, is the whole budget spent on voice actors for this game? And I don't think that would have been a bad call if so. So it just really helped make this an awesome, entertaining experience for me. I even love how in this game you kind of buck the classic point and click adventure games penchant for like collecting endless inventory items where you have to, like, if you're stuck, you're going to take 20 different items and try to make them interact with every item in the room. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
That's never going to happen in this game. They like fix that. There are a few inventory items, but they're linked to a case book where they're linked to objectives where you're kind of not going to use them when they're totally like not neat. Like, you're just not going to get stuck in that sort of like repetitive point and click mystery way. And the casebook stuff is also, I think, kind of modeled after a Sherlock Holmes consulting detective board game. I think this is really smart. It is really gritty. It has a ton of like innuendo and stuff going on in the dialogue. And it has a lot of really dark themes in it, but I wouldn't consider this at all too mature for a young teenager to play. It is rated T for teen. But as we all know, some teen rated games, you wouldn't necessarily want your kid playing. I don't have a kid, but I would want my kid playing this if they were a young teenager, because I just think it's a really great quality piece of media, and I think it's super immersive, and for a kid that age would be really educational as well with the critical thinking that's involved. I think the creators use all this grit and innuendo for some of the more adult humor to fill out the world it's created, to make the detectives and police and criminals far more believable, interesting. And there are just a ton of really, really fun, super good characters in this game. I think that's why the budget has so much money for voice actors allotted, obviously, because the characters and the character development are just so good that it's great to just put that level of talent with the level of talent that went into writing these characters. I loved a lot about this game. The characters were absolutely my favorite part. Each one was out there, but at the same time, all too real. And I think that just makes a damn good detective game in the 1800s. Can't say enough good things about this one.
Cool. I appreciate that you say you don't have any kids, but if you did, and it just makes me wonder, like, are you plotting something? Is one day we're just going to find out you have like a floorboard with like 20 babies hidden underneath?
That's going to be very true, but then you'll come to my house and you'll see they're all cats, and I'll be like, these are my babies.
Yes.
And that's all the plot, like... Do I claim to be a mom? Absolutely. Is it a mom of human beings? No. It's not going to happen.
Cats. It's the People Under the Stairs sequel we didn't know we wanted.
Yeah. It's one of those things where people are going to be like, but cats aren't human beings. And you're going to be like, no, but wait. And you like show them pictures of the cats. And you're like, but look, they are human.
It's like, shh, don't tell her. Just let her have this.
This is my cat riding a unicycle. This is my cat paying taxes. This is my cat making dinner. See, what are you talking about?
And each of these is like a picture from my wallet of like the cat paying taxes or like the cat cooking dinner. I like this. I'm going to make this dream come true, you guys. Y'all have inspired me.
It needs to be that kind of thing where it's like, it's the thing that like the plastic holder for the pictures just kind of flips out and like, you know,
and it just drops like, down the whole way.
Yeah. I don't know what you call that, but it's got to be that.
Before we officially move on from this one, just really, really quick, I know that like most of the time when I review a point-and-click adventure game, I say, get this if you like point-and-click adventure games. If you have ever wanted to play Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, but you don't have anybody to play it with, which is something that my partner and I ran into now that I've discovered I love that game, or you just think you maybe have one more point-and-click adventure game in you for the rest of your life, you just play one more and then you'll be done, make it this game. I think it solves a lot of problems with the game format, and I just think it's really cool.
Mm. All right. Well, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Cubite Classics' Jim Power, The Lost Dimension by Pico, developed by Pico Interactive, published by Cubite Interactive, released June 2nd on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $9.99. Cubite Classics' Jim Power, The Lost Dimension by Pico is a classic action-adventure platformer that brings the special agent Jim Power to save our planet from the supernatural alien Vaprak. Chris, what's going on in Cubite Classics' Jim Power, The Lost Dimension by Pico?
By Pico. Oh, they're in San Antonio. These guys are like down the street from me. I didn't even realize. This is the re-release of... So, you know, people all got their wish list of things that they want to like make death threats to Nintendo over as far as like re-releasing Super Nintendo games on the Switch. You know, I think Earthbound was at the top of that list, and now it's out, so it's fine. I think close to the bottom of that list is Jim Power, The Lost Dimension in 3D. I want to say literally nobody asked for this.
But, wow.
Yeah, but it's not a bad game. It's just weird. So Jim Power, and that's Jim as in James, not like Jim Power like Jim Kata, or like you're going to be like fighting people in a gym. That would be kind of cool. This is James Power, And in The Lost Dimension, you are basically... So it's a platform shooting game, a side-scrolling game where you just collect stuff and try to go from left to right to, you know, beat all the enemies and then, you know, beat a big boss at the end. But then they start to turn it on its ear, and then you get to play a side-scrolling shooter, also known as a shmup, as an in-jet-packened Jim Power, who has been equipped with a jetpack. I think the in-gen-packened, I don't know. There's a word for it, to apply a jetpack to a person. And then you play through that. And then, like, down the road, there's also the top-down rotating, like, rotating the whole field rather than your character. Like, something like, well, Contra 3, of course, comes to mind because that's what it plays just like, but also, like, you know, Brandish or something like that, where, you know, it's completely top-down. Like, you're looking straight down onto, like, the part of his hair. And then when you turn, it flips the entire level around so that you're, you know, shooting stuff that way. Like, there's one of those. And then there's, like, a proper shmup, like, in a spaceship and everything. It's, like, this game's got... It's kind of Battletoads-ish in that it starts one way, but then it just kind of goes off into all these other directions, all of which are very hard. Because this game was originally made in Europe, and it came out on, like, the Amiga and other, like, European computers. And what that almost unilaterally means in the world of retro gaming is that it is impossible. Nobody alive today could play this game now. So be prepared for that. You're going to die a lot, and the death of this game is, like, he just zaps into, like, this screaming skeleton with, like, you know, like, through this badass, like, you know, firebolt that, you know, if you happen to run into a dog or something that's, like, just running at you, not even biting you or anything. So, like, that's the kind of, you know, this game is from that era of ridiculous, and I kind of love it for that. Now, there are some strengths to Jim Power at The Lost Dimension. One is the animation, and this is present in the original SNES game as well. I mean, because this is this version of it is a recreation of the SNES game. It's just straight up the SNES game. The animation is beautiful. Like, your character's running, and it's like 100 frames of animation. It's just like he looks great while he's running. The backgrounds, like, shift in this way that, like, isn't really all that realistic. There's, like, a word for it, the way that they scroll. And it's something that was, like, very popular in, like, the early kind of Genesis area.
Parallax scrolling?
I think it's the Pulfrick effect.
Mode 7?
It uses Mode 7, but, like, it's an effect where it's, like, one thing's moving in one direction and then the other's moving in another direction, so it gives you this illusion of depth, you know?
Oh!
So, like, the background's moving in a different direction than you are.
I've seen that before. I always liked that.
Yeah, so it's got that. It's really, exactly. And it's really cool in this game. The music is also incredible. It's, it's by Chris Hulsbeck, who's the composer for of course, Turrican and many others.
I want to mention this while you mention the music, because I think you'll appreciate this after the episode. So when you're done this episode, go listen to E3 Series.
Oh, no, that was my very next sentence.
Oh, yes.
The first stage of this game is the volcano music from E3, but, like, slightly changed. It's like changed just enough not to get sued. but the very first stage in this game, you're just like, okay, this is cool. Some nice, you know, a nice heavy, like, European beat. If you're familiar with 1993 video games, you'll kind of you'll realize, like, you know, what this is. And then, yeah, the tune comes in, you're like, wait, I've heard this before. And you'll never guess that it's, like, it's E3. That's what it is. It's E3. So, like, that's pretty cool. But the rest of the music's also really good. So, that's the game, basically, is that it's a side-scroller that becomes a shmup, that becomes a top-down, that becomes a whatever, and it's really, 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 really hard, but this game, of course, gives you save states, and it gives you difficulty levels. It does not give you things like rewind or anything like that. Like, there's very... it's very bare bones in what it does give you, but at least it gives you like some tools to get through it. Because, you know, like I said, there's not a person alive that could beat this in 1993. So, certainly not me. But you know, it's still fun and challenging. And so the other star of the show here, the one other thing that's on this in this download is a quote unquote 8-bit version of Jim Power: The Lost Dimension, which is it's that kind of 8-bit that a lot of like the kind of modern indie 8-bit games go for, and that this would never work on a Nintendo, but it does kind of look 8-bit, you know, limited color palette, sprites that are a little flatter, but like the animation is still incredible. Like there's way too much on the screen, you know, it's still got the cool scrolling and stuff. The music is not, it's not like Game Boy music. It's like, it's just like kind of different. So like they basically just kind of reimagined the game, stripped out a few things and kind of added in a couple more things. Honestly, I found myself playing that 8-bit game more than the 16-bit game, quote unquote. They don't say SNES and NES. They just say 16-bit and 8-bit. So, that's the game. And I will take questions now.
Is it worth $10?
$10? I thought it was $20.
No.
Oh yeah, it's worth $10.
$9.99.
I thought it was $19.99 for some reason. And what I was gonna say about that is that for $19.99, they should have included the canceled Genesis port and also the Amiga version of the game. But no, if it's $10, yeah, that's just a buy it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's even on sale on the Switch for $7.49. So
that's sweet. Yeah, go ahead and go for it. I mean, just know, and I was going to say this if the game was $20, but if you actually just want a cart of Jim Power from the Super Nintendo, it's like still like $20. So you could have the original if you want, if you really want. But yeah, this is nice because it adds like that 8-bit version, has like the save states and stuff. So yeah, this is a pretty cool game to get into if you're into that kind of, you know, European shooter platformy type nonsense, which cool. is great.
All right, next up is Numbles, developed and published by Platnip, released June. It's like those are fake words. They're just Numbles and Platnip. Released June 8th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $9.99. Numbles is a platformer where you are the smartest one in a land filled with idiots. No comment. It's up to you to help these guys make it to the exit in one piece. The Numbles are very dumb, but also very predictable. If you put a ladder in front of them, they'll climb it. If you leave a bomb in their path, they'll pick it up and end up hurting themselves and anyone nearby. Pernell, tell us about your time with Numbles.
Oh my god, and friggin' Numbles. So, Numbles plays a lot like the classic game Lemmings, in that on each level, you are given a sort of land terrain setup. And you are tasked with the goal of leading a bunch of really, like you said, really dumb little block people from the beginning of the level to the end of the level. Usually a golden, like, teleportation gate. Now, early on, like, you get to choose when the actual Numbles come out of the gate, out of the departure gate. So you have time to kind of get a lay of the land and, like, determine what objects exist there and how to manipulate them. Now, a variety of objects will exist in the game that you can use for each level. Some light examples, like you said in the thing, there's like a ladder that you can climb, and the Numbles can climb a ladder. There's a shovel that you can use to dig through the earth, and if a Numbles carrying it, it will dig through the earth itself just by walking into the wall, just like a lemming would if it was a digger lemming or something like that. And a few other little random objects that exist on levels that can be utilized, sometimes by Numbles, sometimes only by your main guy. Once you're ready to get the level going, you hit the green go button, and the Numbles will start coming out of the beginning teleporter. They'll start walking to the right, and then hopefully you made the right choices. Now, you'll be doing things throughout the level while they're coming out, too. Like, you might find yourself needing to manipulate something while they're moving so they'll be ready for them when they get there. You might find yourself, who am I kidding? Most of the time, you'll find yourself running behind them, pushing them faster because they're freaking too stupid slow. And you might be like, well, Perno, you're being a jerk. Like, no, I'm serious. They're too slow. The game's clock even tells you so because, the funny thing about this game is that I do at its core think it's a fine game. Like, I do think it's fun to solve the puzzles. I do like to think it's fun to be like, oh yeah, I like how this mechanism works in the context of this level. what drives me freaking bonkers, which is why despite thinking the game is okay, it still pisses me the hell off, is at the end of every level, there are three goals you need to meet to get extra money, which is the collectible in the game that you can use to buy like decoration objects and such.
It's like real life.
Oh, pretty much. Oh, God. Real, I feel like
money is the collectible that you need to get to decorate your house.
Like the first thing you gotta do is save every Numble on the level, because sometimes they can die, whether it be like drowning or by going splat literally, and other ways like getting melted or burned. But if you can get them all to the end of the level, you'll get a treasure chest with some coins in it. The next one will be a matter of being a level with a certain like amount of time, like result, like how fast can you beat the stage. If you can pull that off, you'll get some money. Frankly, that to me is the most annoying level part of the game, the actual time part, because I'm going to get into this right now. They want you to do the level exactly right to get the par time. I mean, perfection. Let the numbles out at the right time. Use the speed up function of the game to get the numbles running as quickly as possible. And like I said earlier, they run so slowly that you actually have to run up behind them and push them further and get to the level quicker. Like if you just let them run, you won't beat the par time. You have to do it by chasing after them and pushing them ahead because they're too freaking dumb slow.
I mean, to be fair, they did ease up on a lot of those times with like the game has gone through a lot of updates since we first got our hands on it. It's been reworked like nearly from the ground up, it seems, to make the game easier and more approachable. It doesn't change the core concept of the game, so it's not like it's going to wildly change what the game is all about. But, oh God, Carnage, who was it that was really hands-on and given a lot of feedback to the dev for this one? I forget who it was. I'm just going to sit here and wait for Carnage to say something in chat.
It is funny too. While he's typing that out, what I'm going to say is that it's Dwagonite. Weird. Like,
there you go.
Like, it's like, I'm like, it's this level of conflict I have within myself, because obviously this is a review and I'm not going to deny it because I think the par times are freaking pain in the ass, because the puzzles are still fun. I like the level design. I like solving the puzzles. It's just a combination of two things related to why it drives me crazy. It's those par times coupled with the fact that the picking up and manipulating of certain objects is extremely finicky. So what I mean by that is like, so left trigger is how you make the guy dash, right? And then there's the B button that just speeds the clock up entirely. Just makes everything run faster. So if I need to run over, like using the dash button to make part time, mind you, to pick up the bridge creation mechanism, I have to be able to stop on the right pixel to be able to pick the bridge up. If I run too far, we're off the cliff because it's heading off of a cliff. So I need to be that good to say, dash, stop right here, pick it up at the perfect spot to place it, pick it up, then run, jump down, run to the cliff where I need to make the new bridge for the numbles, and I have to stop at just the right spot on the cliff to drop it, else I'm going to run off the side. But if I walk up to the bridge to place it, you know, carefully, I'm already out of par. Because again, you have to be perfect. Now, maybe it's possible that the time I've been playing it, including playing it as I'm talking right now, there's an update that I haven't taken that lowered some of these par times. But
no, they've already been lowered then if you're playing after the update.
I've been getting some of these par times. Don't get me wrong. They're not necessarily particularly impossible, but they are really tough to get. You're going to lose your freaking hair trying for some of that shit. Now, again, they're just extra. Like, you don't have to diff them. If you're just solving the levels and saving every numble on each level, that's fine. You can totally do that and enjoy this game because, like I said before, I think the puzzles are nice. I like the idea of trying to manipulate the numbles to use the objects you lay in place for them in just the right way to get through a stage and stuff like that. There are certain levels that will create some really brutal puzzles for extras where, for example, it might be a level where there's a shovel which can be used to dig through the earth, but to get the bonus coins, you have to beat the level without making anyone, yourself or the numbles, use the shovel, which can be pretty tough. But those things are fun to figure out. It's just when you go for, if you're the type of person that like, I can't move on through a stage unless I get this part time so I can get all the unlockables per stage,
you're going to have a bad time.
But if you're not that level of perfectionist and you can just appreciate the game at its base value solve a puzzle and save all the numbles, this is a good game. It is a legitimately good game. It's just the damn poor times and the finicking of using the objects in the right pixel spot. It drives me goddamn nuts. But that's all. I realize I'm a special case, but I know there's other special cases like me out there. So yeah. I got to point that out. So
well, it's $10. What are your thoughts?
I would give it a solid try. Whenever I did solve a puzzle, I felt good. So, and when I figure out levels where the special condition levels, I feel good about that too. So it's scratching that itch. It's doing this. It's doing that just fine. So I think it deserves a try, and hopefully whoever tries it comes away liking it too.
Cool. All right. Next up is Pretty Girls Escape, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released June 2nd on Steam for $4.99. Erase blocks of the same color connected to each other, slide the entire block left and right, remove obstacles, and lead the character blocks to the exit. Conquer stages, collect pretty girls' costumes, and enjoy dressing them up. Chris, tell us about your time with Pretty Girls Escape.
I love the sequence of of the Pretty Girls games, because it's like Pretty Girls Panic, and like, you know, now it's Pretty Girls Escape. But yeah, anyways, so these are puzzle games about pretty girls. I've reviewed 3 or 4 of them now, I think 4 of them, and I almost always have the same thing to say about them. I swear to God, I'm actually playing these games. But yeah, so it is a game that is like, it's a puzzle game based on actually this one's not such a popular one, a Mahjong or Arkanoid, which is, you know, two of the others. They should have called it Pretty Girls Breakout, honestly, because Breakout and Escape, anyways, whatever. I already ruined that joke. So the this game actually is one that I played the style of this game on the DS as a game called Squishy Tanks, which is one of the greatest DS games. I actually really truly love Squishy Tanks, and I hope it's not one of those ones that became expensive. It's basically where it's a bunch of colored blocks in like different patterns, you know, depending on the level. And if you push the button on any group of 2 or more of those blocks, they will disappear and all the other blocks will fall into place and replace them. The idea is to get rid of all those blocks by trying to get them to fall into each other and pair up, or, you know, create larger, you know, larger connected like globs of, you know, these similar colored blocks. And then the more you clear, the better. This one is that, but it adds a couple of elements to it. One is the actual idea of these girls having to escape. What are they escaping from? I don't know. But there will be a tile, like a 4-block size tile of the portrait of the girl who you are trying to assist in her escaping from this game, and or at least this level. And basically, you have to make sure that the blocks, you know, don't get in the way of that girl getting to the very bottom of the screen, which is where the escape hatches are. And the girl has to be able to line up perfectly with one of the escape hatches. So the like curveballs that the game will throw at you are things like unbreakable blocks that your girl can get stuck in. Also, you know, the actual exit might be like otherwise hard to get to. So you have to like manipulate the blocks to kind of get her over there. So it's not a brainless game at all. Some of them I would accuse of being a little too simplistic, but this one actually does get challenging pretty early on, which is really nice. It's basically that kind of thing. It's, you know, just sort of seeing a couple steps ahead and gathering up all the blocks where you need them to go. And you know, it's one of those games you can easily just spend hours on, because, you know, it's as simple as getting colored blocks to touch each other and then click on them, you know? And I actually I tossed the controller on this one, just ended up using the mouse, because I was like, mouse is so much easier. Nah. Again, though, I played Squishy Tank to death. Like, I actually beat it, and, you know, it was way better to use the stylus on that game, so it's a great touch interface kind of thing. Now, of course, I have to give this disclaimer to anybody who is thinking this is a Nordy game. Although it kind of rates itself as being somewhat naughty. There's no nudity in this game. Don't go trying to get that. There's plenty of other places to go on Steam for that, apparently. it's pretty girls, and that's literally what they mean. They're anime ladies. They're having a good time. You can dress them up in other
thing over the top.
They're just cute and
they're just having fun.
Curvy.
Pretty girls having fun.
Pretty girls having fun and escaping from whatever hell you're trying to
from
whatever color
block
puzzles.
Hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's $5. What do you think?
As always, I recommend it based on the puzzle game aspect of it. You know, if this is your source for pretty anime girls, then by all means, this is as good a quality as the other ones. I would actually say less risque than the other ones as well. Like, they kind of have been going away from any kind of risqueness at all. Or maybe I just didn't play far enough into this one. I don't know. But definitely get this one for the puzzle element because it is solid.
Sweet. All right, yeah. We got one final game to talk about tonight, and that is a preview of Metal Hellsinger, developed by The Outsiders, published by Funcom. It's releasing later in 2022 for Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC. Strike terror into the hearts of demons and devils as you fight your way through eight hells. Metal Hellsinger is a rhythm FPS brimming with diabolical enemies, powerful weapons, and metal music. Set out on an infernal journey in order to achieve the purest of goals, vengeance. Purnell, you got an early look at a preview build of Metal Hellsinger. What are your thoughts on it?
Before even going to the view, I'm just going to say I finished the demo. Forgot it was a demo of a game that wasn't out yet. It was like, buy the game. I was like, I want to do it. I couldn't buy it because it's not ready yet. This game is freaking great. It is, like you said, it's an FPS game, but it's done to a rhythm of a metal song. The demo lets you play through one level, and as you're running around the game, monsters will pop up like an FPS would, and you can move without being on the beat, and you're not punished for it. However, and hell, if anything, you're actually allowed to do anything and not be punished for it. However, to reap the benefits and play at your absolute best, you need to do pretty much all actions on the beat. That includes the dash, which is like a temporary, you press the button to like lunge forward quickly. You dash to the beat. You fire your guns to the beat. You charge up your weapons because some of the guns have a charge function. So you just press the button to begin the charge on the beat, and then you let it go to release the charge attack also on the beat. As you play the game and you charge up, you use a bunch of charge attacks and you are charged, but use a bunch of like rhythmic timed attacks. And you continue to do so, you'll build up a fury gauge. And once the fury gauge hits a certain point, the metal track you're listening to gets the vocals injected into the metal track, and it feels freaking good. The intro level of the game had the vocalist from Arch Enemy in it doing the vocals for the song, but I believe the song was an original for the game itself. And once the vocals kicked in,
I think they have a lot of original songs for this one.
Yeah, I'm hoping they're going to be a ton, because I saw that he mentioned earlier, like, I always get his name wrong, but like Serge Tankian.
Yep, from System of a Down. Wrong. Matt Heafy from Trivium. Randy Blythe from Lamb of God. There's a couple others.
They're going to have a lot. And I'm hoping, I'm actually kind of okay with them not being in the demo, because I need something for the stages.
Yeah.
But this thing, like, it was frenetic and fun. Like, I didn't even realize I could have this kind of fun with this style of game. And the coolest thing about it is it scratches the rhythm gamer's itch, because the levels have high score sheets and they gauge how much of the time you spent on the level in max fury mode, which again is when the vocals kick in. So you'll be playing the game going for these like max like fury runs where you take as little damage as possible. They grade you on that, getting a high score. And each weapon has its own like sort of timing to it, because obviously everything's on the beat. But let's say, for example, you're busting out a pair of dual pistols. Well, clearly they fire quickly. She's like, boom, 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 boom. You're like letting off shots. But if you get the shotgun's going to fire a shot, and then you got to reload the shotgun, you know, pump action and all that. So you can't fire on every note. You got to fire like every other beat, because you got to let the shotgun reload itself. And you just kind of get this cool rhythm. And depending on like the, how much you do damage to the enemy, or how many times you hit the enemy without actually killing them, i.e. using weaker attacks, you can eventually put them into like a stump, a stupor state where you can lunge into them, smash them up, and get health orbs from this called slaughter mode. So you get this really cool rhythm where you're like, pew, 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 pew. He's like doing the whole flow. You get into an actual pacing of doing a series of actions on the beat while under duress. It's really cool. And then the boss they gave you at the end of the thing was a damn bullet hell boss. She's like spraying bullets at you and you're dodging the shit, and then enemies are showing up, and the whole time you're like, fire on beat. Can't lose that fury, goddammit. Gotta stick with it. It's freaking good. It's addictive. And I was genuinely sad when it was like, demo's over. I was like, no, I want another stage. I want to keep going. This is great.
Sounds like we had some good previews on the show between this one and Tim playing with Tarnishing of Juxtia.
Yes, this is a game to keep your eyes peeled for. This is one of those examples. I'm sure such a thing does exist. I would bet if I went digging, there has to be a rhythm FPS out there somewhere. And despite that,
I mean, there is BPM out, bullets per minute.
I can't imagine it being as cool as this game. That's what I was leading into. I can't imagine it being as cool as this game. If it is, then I fucking missed out. But this game is... If it can maintain this momentum throughout the rest of it, i.e. like, you know, a variety of monster types that will keep you on your toes. Because, again, the thing that will make this doubly interesting down the line is like having that added element of stress coming from your opponents while you're trying to maintain that rhythm. Because you ever seen like a good Doom player back in the day playing the old Doom, they're speed running it, and you just see them kind of like, just like rhythmically, there's like playing through stairs, like, okay, I know to get through this. And when that door is opening up, I already know I need to run over to the left here to get this armor off the wall because I'm trying to speed run. I ain't got time for games, right? You've seen that. It's that same sort of kinetic vibe, except now it's not just knowing where to go and how to get there. It's knowing where to go, how to get there, working under pressure, and just doing the dance on time, not just quickly, but also on time. It's gonna have legs. I even look forward to like the speedrunning community playing this, because you know there will be videos of people playing this game showing off how good they are at a stage, and having that music and watching the guy keep pacing is going to add extra flavor to every video. This guy, whoever's developing this game, they're onto something, and I look forward to seeing where it comes out there on the other end of the tunnel.
Nice. All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through.
Yay!
Hooray.
Good job, everyone.
Brooke, oh, I didn't know if you were still with us or not.
I'm still here. I almost, I could tell. I was like, this is almost over. I'm going to chill for just a little bit.
She's smiling down at us from up above.
Brooke is officially a part of the episode end club.
Hell yeah. I'll make it every time I can, for sure.
Well, yes, since you're here, you might as well do the honors for us. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Ooh, actually, last time I had final words, I gave y'all a quote from my favorite philosopher, Gucci Mane. I'll give you another one, but let me look it up because I don't want to mess it up.
Okay.
See, now you got to wait.
Is it also from Gucci Mane, or is it from like a new one?
No, this is my favorite. Okay.
Gummy worm.
Exposing hoes is a form of snitching. She trusts you and gave you some pussy and you told you the hoe. All right. Good night, everybody.